Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Brett Ciancia of Pick Six Previews will join us. We'll go over some college football, conference by conference, Heisman, futures, win totals. Brett does a great job with it. Pick Six Previews is a must-read magazine if you're getting ready for college football. Highly recommend it. So excited to talk to Brett. And we'll get to him in a minute. But start with some baseball and some takeaways from the NFL preseason. And to me, the story right now in baseball is this wild card race in the American League, where it's fun. There's so many teams involved. And I've been saying all year, except for the Angels, the Royals, the A's, you can pretty much, everyone's in the mix. I remember a week or so before the deadline, I said, you know what? You can include the Blue Jays, because the Blue Jays are, I think they were 9-10 games under 500 at that point, and they look like sellers. They traded Kevin Gausman, one of their best pitchers, but they did get Jose Soriano back, and they have played very well. So right now you have a wild card race, and the games are still going on Sunday. A wild card race between Toronto, Baltimore, and Baltimore had a nice weekend here in Tampa. Toronto, Baltimore, Texas, Cleveland, Minnesota, Texas. I mentioned Texas. You got five or six teams in Minnesota. I mean, there's six teams within pretty much like a half a game here. So it's about as crazy as a race as you're going to see. Now it's watered down because you just don't need all these teams. I think the perfect format, I forget when they changed it, about 4 or 5 years ago. It was the three division winners get in, and then there's two wild cards, and those wild cards play, and one of them gets eliminated. It's a one-game playoff. That was perfect, because look at these teams in the mix. Texas goes into Sunday two games under, holding the final spot, followed by Toronto, Baltimore, Detroit. Detroit was the team I'm thinking of. Minnesota and Cleveland. Minnesota, Cleveland, four games under 500, a game out. Seattle's eight games under 500 going into Sunday. They're three games out. I mean, it's just ridiculous. You don't need all these teams, and it's watered down. But whoever gets the sixth seed, and I think I would favor Baltimore, and it's a big week for them. They play the Yankees this week, and after that, they play six games against Colorado and Sacramento. So Baltimore right now is plus 500 to be the sixth seed, and I don't think they'll catch the five. They're not winning the division. That would be the play for me. And big week coming up. They do have one more on Monday against Tampa, so it's a wraparound series when you go from Friday to Monday. Three against the Yankees, three more against Tampa. Then they have at St. Louis, at the A's, at the Rockies to finish the month. Baltimore would be my team, but you know what? It's anybody's guess. We have this many teams trying to sort through. Again, I like Baltimore the most. I think there's the most talent, but could you make a case for Toronto? They got the 1-2 punch of Cease and Soriano. Now, they went to a World Series last year. Detroit's got the run differential, even though they traded players off. It's you're splitting hairs between all of these teams. You really are. But it should be fun. So that race, something to keep an eye on. Good weekend for Detroit. Doesn't look like they're going to win on Sunday, losing as we're recording this, but you know, recorded before the Friday series, thinking 2.5 game lead for the White Sox going into Detroit. If Detroit can sweep them, and Detroit's at home, so sweeps, you know, not out of the question. White Sox haven't been playing well. Tigers had been. Detroit wakes up on Monday or goes to bed on Sunday, half game lead. White Sox win on Friday. White Sox win again on Saturday, and the White Sox stave off and give themselves a little bit of cushion instead of, you know, getting swept or having a rough weekend, and you look up and all of a sudden you're in second place and a young team maybe starts to panic or gets down on themselves. They rebounded quite nicely here. So a good weekend for the White Sox. I would think they hang on and win that division, but I keep going back and forth between, all right, Detroit's the better team. No, the White Sox have the cushion. So that'll be a race to keep an eye on. I still think the Rays are going to win the East despite having a rough weekend against Baltimore. Yankees just don't score enough. And to me, the Yankees, game to game, aren't under. They have such good pitching, and they have such bad hitting. If they can ever get Judge, Bellinger, Stanton back, they're probably the best team. Now, you got to get those guys back. They got to be 100%, and it sounds like Bellinger's pretty close. Could be back within a week or so. Going to have a rehab game and then join the Yankees. Remember, he wasn't out that long. He was, you know, in the All-Star game, won the All-Star game MVP. But Yankees are going to need those guys back. But right now, they just can't score. They just can't hit. And they're actually pitching really well. So, you know, they're going to be in the playoffs. I don't know that they have enough firepower here to jump up and catch Tampa in the AL East. And then the AL West, you know, it's anybody's guess. The last thing, too, and John Jastrzemski, I was doing the show with Sunday, he brought this point up. It's a good one. Whoever gets the sixth seed, it's kind of the sweet spot. If the White Sox win the division, the sixth seed plays the Astros in the first round, or the Rangers, whoever wins the West. And DeGrom left his start the other night with tricep tightness. So, you know, that could be something to keep an eye on. You would get, but if you're the sixth seed, you get the Astros and maybe the White Sox, and then you're all of a sudden you look up and you're in the ALCS, and neither of those teams are unbeatable. If you're the Orioles, if you're the Blue Jays, if you're any of these teams, you know, a Astros White Sox path to an ALCS, even though you're four games under, is very manageable and makes it interesting. Even though, again, I think there's just too many teams that make the playoffs, but it's like all these other sports. Once the games start, I'm happy we have them. I like watching them. I like betting them, even if there are probably too many of them and it waters down the playoff product. Quickly on the NFL, so that'll be my bet. Orioles plus 500 to be the sixth seed. Shop around, maybe find a little better. FanDuel does have that price as we're recording this. NFL takeaways. I mentioned a couple times this summer, I like Atlanta to win the South. Have the price a little too long. I like the coaching upgrade. The division's weak. I don't know. Tua looked rough the other night. Two big defenders that are down already. James Pierce, who got suspended, who deserved to be suspended. 8 games. I mean, he's lucky. He only got 8 games. And it doesn't sound like he's going to be facing any more legal trouble somehow with all the domestic stuff off the field. And then Jalon Walker, former first overall pick, he's out for the year. Knee injury. So you've lost two key defenders for a long period of time, one for half the year, the other for the whole year. And it's just Tua the other night. I don't know. I'm a little off that. So I'm not sure where I'd go with the South. I mean, I gave it out. I bet it. So got to kind of live with it. And maybe it's only one game. It's only a couple series in the preseason, but got to have a little concern here about Tua and how Atlanta looked and just how the season has started. It was nice to have the games on this weekend. I was actually missing it on Sunday because you get into that football watching mode. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, watching the games, having games on pretty much all day, all night, starting Thursday night. You know, Saturday was wall-to-wall football. The Packers might have found a kicker. Remember the Packers last year lost in the wild card round because they missed 3 kicks. They lose by 4 to the Bears. They missed 2 field goals, McManus did, and an extra point. The kid they got, Trace Mack from Florida, 6th-round pick, was drilling kicks against the Steelers Thursday night. And by the way, Will Howard looked pretty good for the Steelers. I know it's preseason. We have to say that, all those caveats. But maybe they found a young quarterback that can at least be serviceable, you know, down the road here once Rodgers retires. But they got a kicker. I mean, the kid was making them from 60 yards. I understand. Preseason, it's August. The weather conditions are fine as opposed to kicking in Lambeau or Chicago come January. But he looked really good, so... These kickers don't matter. You don't think about them. They don't matter until they do. And that was one that was impressive. He stood out to me. Mendoza, I think, is going to be okay. And by okay, I mean, I don't think he's going to be a bust. I don't know if he's going to be a star, but I'd be pretty surprised if he's not, you know, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, at least a starter, at least an average starter, if not better. Now, you hope for better, obviously, when you're picking first in the draft. You pick a guy first overall in the draft. You want him to be a star. You want him to be a top 10-ish quarterback, if not better. Be surprised if he's a bust. He made some good throws. He looked impressive. You know, he's got a good head on his shoulders. He has all the quotes about avoiding the Las Vegas Strip. He's mature. The intangibles are there. And I think physically he's enough where you combine the off-the-field stuff and just the maturity and the work ethic with his physical tools. Man, I'd be surprised if he's a bust. I think there's a pretty high floor with Mendoza. I don't know how good they're going to be defensively. They might be picking high again because Arizona ran all over them on Thursday night. And I know Arizona lost offensive lineman Bistonis. They took in the 2nd round. Love got banged up, the rookie running back. Why you're giving your stud rookie running back 14 touches in the first preseason game, I'm not sure. And he did get banged up, but doesn't seem like it's serious. So was good to have it back. It was really good to have it back. Those are a few takeaways. Just, you know, games on all the time. And those line moves, the unders did well. The underdogs did well. The line moves did not get home. And if you were playing the worst of the number, you got absolutely destroyed. If you got ahead of the number, you did a little bit better. But the quote unquote sharp movement, you know, did it pan out? And it's tough because you bet something, you hear, all right, the starter's going to play, so I'm going to bet them. I'm going to lay 1. Then the line moves to 3 or 4. The starters are going to play, but they're going to play for like a series. And they might go 3 and out. They might, okay, they get a field goal. It's 3-0. And then all of a sudden, you're stuck laying points in just a total coin flip with a bunch of quarterbacks who, you know, you watch some of these preseason games. There's at least 3 or 4 times through the weekend. I said, wow, that guy's still in the league. Case Keenum's still in the league. Bailey Zappi's still in the league. Nick Mullins is still in. There's a handful of these guys you just completely forget about that. You don't even remember are still in the league. And those are the guys you end up betting on. So week 2 coming up of the preseason. A couple weeks from now, less than 2 weeks, college football will be underway. UNC and TCU gets it started. Let's talk to Brett Ciancia. We'll get his thoughts on everything. Win totals, conference futures, awards, you name it. That is next. This Sugar Bet More Podcast. All right, very excited for our next guest. You can catch him Pick Six Previews. He does a great job. The magazine is a must read if you're getting ready for college football. It is Brett Ciancia. Brett, we're almost there, man. Less than 2 weeks. How's it going? And I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, Will, thanks for having me on. It's a busy time of year here with Pick Six Previews, with the magazine going out, off the printing press, shipping across the country, but best time of year. I mean, we're 2 weeks from kickoff, looking at all the season win totals, all the conference races. It's wide open. Excited to be on with you and break it down.
Yeah, we'll get to all of that. I would say this, and again, you did a great job with the magazine. A lot of work goes into it. Since you finished it, is there anything where, you know, if you could go back and you had an edit button, man, I might feel differently about this, or I've learned that. Is there anything that's kind of changed here in the time since this got printed?
Well, I think that all that goes into it, it's a full year project. I call it the never-ending research project, where I'm talking to head coaches and coordinators, watching spring games, practice reports, you name it. So a lot goes into this book. I write all the teams myself, edit them. So in terms of like conference predictions and standings, I think I'm locked in with what I published. I will say that once it's published, once I move into August, it becomes more about the win total bets and looking at those numbers. So I would say that my opinion has shifted a little bit now, looking at schedule by schedule. I mean, I really factor that in now more with the win totals. Some of these SEC gauntlets are crazy. We'll get into that conference later in the show, but the addition of the ninth conference game has really like opened my eyes to these win total numbers. So in terms of conference prediction, I haven't really changed much opinion wise, but now like with more of a focus on win totals, looking at schedule breaks here and there, like, yeah, there's a lot more to break down in that category.
Well, let's start. We'll get to some of these conferences, but 2 weeks from now, I'll be doing this podcast. I'll be reacting, I'm sure, to North Carolina TCU. Will I be saying, you know what, it's Belichick watch, we're counting down the days till they get a new coach, they lose 40-10, and they get embarrassed in front of everybody? Or is it going to be, and I know there's a middle ground, or is it going to be, you know what, Belichick, maybe it's going in the right direction, maybe a little better than people think? Do you have any thoughts on that game, TCU-UNC, and just the general UNC program in general? I know it's been a tumultuous offseason, especially the last couple weeks or so.
Yeah, well, with UNC, it was a big experiment last year, bringing Bill Belichick back to the college level, bringing this NFL staff around him, and really an NFL approach to Chapel Hill. We'd never seen it, and it didn't really click last year. I mean, that goes without saying. Four-win season, offense was broken all year. Defense did play well towards the back half of the season, but then you get to the offseason and the talent acquisition game, they had a lot of their best players poached from the transfer portal. I mean, a lot of their top defenders were poached. They weren't able to retain some of their offensive stars. I think it's one returning starter on the whole offense or something. So normally I look at a second year and get that second year coach bonus. I'm not seeing it this year. It looks like another transitional type year. And then the other thing is that and this is probably good longer term for them, but they really shifted away from transfer portal more to the high school recruiting ranks. So while they did sign a top 25 high school class, that's all 18-year-olds this year. I don't know that's really going to change the program immediately, but I think longer term, maybe the players come in and be better. So this experiment's far from done, but I don't think it's going to click this year. I think they're in for another rebuilding, reloading type year. I think TCU is going to win big. And I was shocked to see that line come in at 6.5. It's been bet up over the touchdown number to now 7.5. I wouldn't be surprised if that gets to double digits. I think TCU is going to win big here. Maybe not a 40-point bomb like last year in the opener, but it's going to be pretty sizable for TCU.
Yeah, and that was 7-0 UNC. UNC's home. The building's going crazy. Oh, man, this is going to work with Belichick. Then they got absolutely buried, and we know how that went. And they actually played, okay, a little bit better to end the year, but it was a rough year, to say the least. Let's get into some of these conferences. I had Tim Murray on. I know you go around with him sometimes. A month or so ago, I said, man, Georgia to win the SEC, plus 325. You look at their schedule. They avoid Texas, Texas A&M, LSU. They got a lot of talent coming back. They bring back the quarterback. All right, at Bama, at Ole Miss, you split those, you're in the title game. It's down to plus 260. I still like it, but that's probably about the last point I would play it. Who do you like to win the SEC? I'll give you the floor. Win the conference, win totals. Give me a thought or two, whatever direction you want to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I agree with you with Georgia at the top, and I think that's the pick to win the conference this year. You start with last year, defending SEC champs. They bring back their quarterback, Gunnar Stockton, bring back a big offensive line, but really it's that championship caliber defense. These are the types of defenses that Kirby Smart wins titles with, and they rotate more than anybody in the country on defense in terms of snaps and starts. So you can't just look at returning starter number. You got to look at their whole two deep, their three deep. A lot of these guys are back. Multiple All-American candidates in the secondary. Five stars everywhere at the linebacking core, and a lot to like in the front too. So I like the whole defense. Gunnar Stockton at quarterback. And then, you know, I think that to take the next step to even go national title, I want to see a, you know, an alpha number one receiver step up on the outsides. That's been lacking for them a couple years. But again, that's nitpicking going from SEC champs to national champ. I think SEC, that's your pick. And if you look at the schedule break too, they actually draw the easiest SEC schedule this year. And I know that's still a tough schedule in general, but within the context of the SEC, they only play three of the top eight in the league. So a little bit of a schedule boost as if they needed any extra help. They already are the best team, in my opinion. So they're my pick to win the SEC. And then to your other point, I will throw in a win total here. I'm going to release one of my pick six plus win totals for the year. I like Tennessee to go over their 7.5 number. Right now it's checking in around minus 115, minus 120. So it's not overly juiced. I like finding value like that. But when you talk Tennessee, first off, you think the Josh Heupel offense. It's hyper-tempo. It's the wide splits on the field by the receivers. They went for 40 points a game last year. They bring back eight starters off that offense. Four O-linemen, two great receivers, and the big workhorse running back. Question at quarterback, but if you're telling me that the biggest question on the Tennessee program is at quarterback, I like it. I like both the options they've got there with George McIntyre, 6'6", 220 build, going up against the five-star freshman with Faison Brandon, who I think is going to win the job as a true freshman. But they're going to be solid there at quarterback. And then what made it more of an appealing bet to me, not just the offense, was now pairing with the defense. You got Jim Knowles coming down from Penn State, formerly Ohio State, Duke, Oklahoma State. He's one of the best defensive minds in the game. And I think they're going to have a solid defense to pair with a Heupel offense. So I like it. And you look at their schedule, I think they're going to be favored in probably eight spots. That would, you know, take care of business. You get to that number right away. But they probably steal an upset here or two as well. So I like them to go over 7.5.
One I like, and I'm curious if you have a thought on it. Well, I like Oklahoma. I just think defense, you get a quarterback. I know the schedule's tough, but I could certainly see them going over the 7.5 and maybe being a, you know, threat to go back to the playoff. Mateer, I didn't think was healthy the second half of last year, which was pretty clear. Vandy under. I just don't know. I know Pavia not going to translate to the next level. Polarizing guy, kind of unlikable, but just a production machine in college. Eli Stowers was as good as any tight end in the country. You know, Richardson was a big-time receiver. Vandy, to me, Brett, just not the type of program where it's Ohio State or Georgia, where it's, all right, we lose these pros, but then we replace them with a bunch of other pros. I know the kid's a five-star, but a five-star, a true freshman, you know, on the road, SEC environments. To me, Vandy, and I know the numbers moved a little bit, I could see an under with them. Would you agree, disagree, any thought there on the Commodores?
Yeah, with Vanderbilt, I'm pretty low on them as well. If you look at the preview magazine there, I've got them 15th in the 16-team SEC. I mean, I've got them second to last. And, you know, it's not to knock what they built last year. I think when Clark Lee was hired, he called it his 10-year plan. It only took him half the time. In 5 years, he got to, a record-breaking season, 10 wins, a Heisman candidate. They even beat Alabama the year prior and threw the goalposts into the river. Like, they had some epic moments there the last 2 years. But that Pavia effect for me, taking him out of that program, out of that offense, he did so much for them. And some of it was obviously stat driven. You look at the stats, but even the off the stat sheet stuff that he was able to pull off, like the extra second scramble that he could pull off that would open up a receiver, or like, you know, maybe juking one extra defender that breaks open a long run. Like, these types of plays, they're not going to be able to replace it. And I know Jared Curtis coming in as a five-star number one overall quarterback. He's going to be good in a couple years. But it's just not enough this transitional type season to bounce back to 10 wins. So, yeah, I agree with you there. I'm selling Vanderbilt. And to your Oklahoma point, I agree with you there too, because I've got them actually playing Georgia in the SEC championship game. So I hope that means they go over the 7.5. I mean, that would be hard not to. So I like where they are. Again, championship defense. The offense, to your point with John Mateer, I think he's going to improve now a second year in the SEC, get his hand healthy, second-year coordinator with Ben Arbuckle now getting his complex scheme more installed, and a young offensive line last year growing into a more of a sophomore-junior-type line. So I think there's a lot of improvement to be had on offense, some gains there that makes it a complete team. So far, we're in agreement, Will. I like having strength in numbers here. I like it.
All right, Big Ten, you tell me. Oregon, Ohio State, Indiana, can you throw a blanket over those three teams? Do you like one more than another? I know Oregon, they got plenty coming back, the quarterback, a lot on the defensive line. I think probably not enough is made of Lanning. And look, we all know he's a great coach. Everyone would want him to lead their program. They've had some loud exits. 2 years ago, Ohio State's up 40-0 basically before the half is over. Last year, Indiana ran them off the field. And even a few years ago, Washington, with a chance to go to the playoffs, Oregon, big favorite. Knicks is about to win the Heisman. And they were never in that game as a big favorite. So Any separation between those three teams? I guess you could look at Penn State and say, hey, with that schedule at 20-1, it's not impossible. They dance through an easy schedule and make the title game. But you tell me anyone you like in the Big Ten more than the other teams.
Yeah, well, I'm calling it the year of the duck. I'm going all in with Oregon here, not only to win the Big Ten at plus 270, but they're my pick to win the national title. And this actually happened in last year's magazine. You look back at my 2025 edition. When I was doing my research for that year, I was going position by position like I do for every team, and I was blown away by the five-star talent that they've accumulated up in Oregon. You look at it, it's three straight top five high school recruiting classes, and then back-to-back top five transfer halls on top of it. They're the only team in America to pair both of those categories. So it is an NFL machine over there. And so in last year's book, after the research, I said, you know, they're really talented, they're really young. So I'm going to call for them not in 25, but in 26 to be my national champion pick. Now, 12 months later, I'm sticking with it. Put that in this year's magazine, number one Oregon. And, you know, they were top five, both my numbers last year, offense and defense. You get Dante Moore back from the pros, probably would have been a first round pick. You look at my all Big Ten team, all four of the guys are Oregon defensive linemen. It's the whole front four. So I like this team a lot. I think that, like you said, Dan Lanning has really built a machine here. And, you know, I know he hasn't gotten over the hump, but every coach has not, you know, every coach that won a national title had to get over that eventually. I think of Ryan Day, he could never win the big one. Dabo with Clemsoning, like, you know, I think they're due. I think it's going to happen. So I like Oregon to win the conference. Penn State, I'm a little more bearish on here. I'm going to fade them a little bit here. And, you know, I like to start with like going position by position, looking at the talent on the roster, and then look at schedule. And I think in this case, the schedule is so tempting to just look at that first. I got to understand what Penn State actually has in the building. If they can go through a normal Big Ten schedule, maybe an easier Big Ten schedule, and get to 10 wins. I think that's too high. 9.5 is their win total. And, you know, it's like half of Iowa State's roster. They were solid last year, above average Big 12 team. But I think first you need to look room by room at Penn State. I don't think it's a 10-win type team. So that's where I'm at with them. So I am selling Penn State.
Everyone, and rightfully so, is terrified to bet against Indiana and Kurt Cignetti. You know, playoff team, maybe more bottom half of the playoff team. Are they a contender again to actually win the whole thing? Can you give me a thought or two on Indiana?
Yeah, I think there's got some staying power there at Indiana now. And, you know, I'm not a hot takes guy, but I think it's safe to say that this is the best coaching project we've ever seen in college football history, taking the losingest program of all time, Indiana, the punching bag of the Big Ten. And I'm not saying a 10-year build. In the first transition year, playoff right away, bam, 11-1. And then they followed up with a 16-0 run, a Heisman winner, all those crazy moments, blowing out Alabama off the field. Like, that was an all-time team. And I think he's the kind of guy, if you look at his, like, his mentality, his approach, like his process, he almost seems like a Saban-esque figure where they're not gonna overlook the season. They're not gonna have a hangover off the title. Like, they started on 2026 the next day, so I think they're gonna come back strong. They return a lot of the proven pieces off the defense, a couple All-American candidates for me there on that side of the ball. Offensive line might just go win the Joe Moore Award that's given out to the top line. Four starters back. They had great run push last year. I think they're gonna be strong there. Really hinges on the quarterback spot, and of course, it's gonna be hard to replace your Heisman winner, first overall pick, Fernando Mendoza. He made some clutch plays throughout that whole playoff run. Josh Hoover is veteran. He's an experienced player. He's had 3 years started at TCU. A ton of yards, ton of touchdowns, a lot of turnovers too. Though that's something to keep an eye on. I believe it's like 50-something turnovers the last couple of years, a lot of fumbles. So if that part of his game gets fixed, they're a national champion contender right again. So I've got him third in the Big Ten. I have it Oregon and Ohio State as my top two in the league, but I've got Indiana three and a playoff team.
The Big 12, Texas Tech odds on. I had Brad Powers on, who said, hey, just put it in your pocket, bet Texas Tech. They're going to be in the title game. They're going to be a favorite, and you're going to be happy you had it. I know my buddy, the Bear, Chris Felica, says he likes Kansas State with what they bring back, coach, quarterback, schedule. I've heard BYU. People make a case for that. I don't know. Where do you come down here? Is there any value betting the Big 12?
Yeah, well, I think it's Texas Tech's conference right now. And I was kind of shocked at the Big 12 media days. They did the coaches poll. The coaches voted for BYU to win the conference. And no slouch with BYU. That's a strong team. But I think that might have been some off-the-field politicking going on with Texas Tech. Because, yeah. I mean, this is the best roster in the conference, hands down. There's no way to slice it otherwise. And two talent numbers for you that I've got in the book. And I love looking at these kind of things. The transfer market. If you look at four-star transfer additions, Texas Tech signed 20 the last 2 years combined. The average Big 12 team has signed 2. So you got 20-2 in terms of four stars coming in. And then the other number, now people might not like to look at NFL draft watch lists and mocks this early, but I find it as, you know, part of the process. You look at it. If you look at the East-West Shrine Bowl's 1,000 list, Texas Tech leads the country in NFL draftable prospects with 27. The next closest in the conference is TCU with 12. That's a huge gap in terms of NFL, you know, scouted players and projected players. So I love the talent on Texas Tech. The one question is going to be their defensive line. It was one of the best pass rushers in the country last year. All four guys went pro. And if you talk to Joey McGuire, he'll tell you that, yeah, we sent four guys to the pros. We just added four new draft picks to Texas Tech. He likes the next line coming up for them. I think they'll be strong. It's going to be hard to match last year's elite tier of defense, but it's strong enough of a team to win the conference for sure. So that's who I've got winning it. But if you want to find some value, I go a little bit more down the list here. I like TCU, a team no one really has talked about at all. And when I go through, I like to look at the high school recruiting as well. And when you take Oklahoma and Texas out of the old Big 12 footprint, if you look at the high school recruiting, TCU number one in 23, in 24, and in 25 in terms of high school recruiting. So it's a talented roster. Maybe didn't make so much noise in the transfer portal, but it's a solid team. I like the receivers, their pass rush. It all comes down to quarterback with Jaden Craig coming from Harvard. But all to say, there's value with TCU. I like their win total all the way down at 6.5. I mean, that's definitely a 7-win team. But then maybe take a roulette chip on them to win the conference. But it's really Texas Tech's league.
The ACC, look, I know Cristobal has a habit of losing games he shouldn't lose. And you can question on-the-field decisions, and we all know the past, but man, that team is loaded. It seems like Cristobal has it rolling. We know he can recruit. On one hand, the game day issues are one thing, but it got to a title game. He really, you go back and look at the box score, and people that listen to this podcast have heard me complain enough because I had Miami 150-1 to win the whole thing, and you look, they outgained them yards per play.
Yeah.
They supposedly had that fake punt set up. They got a punt blocked. I mean, and even after all that, they're sitting there with the ball, what, the plus 40-yard line, 50 seconds left. Beck did not need to force the ball to have plenty of time to matriculate and score, but they're loaded. To me, they're better than everyone else in the ACC. This is where I would go chalk, put it in your pocket. They'll be in the title game. They'll be favored. I don't know. Agree, disagree. Any thoughts on Miami or anyone else here in the ACC that you find interesting?
Yeah, that's got to sting because I agree with you. I mean, on that night, Miami kind of outplayed them. I mean, you look at my game grader formula, it's kind of a post-win expectancy type thing, kind of a margins thing. Miami was the better team on paper in that game. So, and you saw too with their pass rush, they were all over Mendoza. Now gutsy play calls by Cignetti ended up flipping the result, but yeah, that's a strong team. I think Miami as a program really grew up in the postseason last year, now ascending into being the ACC's dynasty type program. Sounds funny to say because they still haven't won the conference ever, but I think going forward now with the Dabo dynasty receding, I think Miami is now your program there. Talent acquisition top 10 every year in terms of high school and transfers. I think they really upgraded their offense this time around, bringing Darian Mensah down from Duke, a guy who's number one in the country in downfield passing. So more of a vertical threat coming here. It's going to be a high-flying, high-scoring offense, getting that ball to Malachi Toney. And he's not the only guy. They've got arguably the deepest receiver core outside of Ohio State. So I think while you lose some linemen and some pass rush, now they're going to replace them just fine, but you lose those star players, I think you add it back with this pass game. So I think Miami's a complete team, a national title contender. I've got them number three in the whole country. I think that's a little bit higher than the market would show. They're going to be favored in every game except Notre Dame, and probably a coin flip that game too. So I like Miami a lot. To go a little down the sheet, I like Louisville, some value here. Looking at a top 20 team in my numbers on offense and defense last year, bring back a good pass rush. Now, it's a different style of quarterback than Louisville's used to having. You think of Coach Brohm, his pocket passers. And I asked him about this on my call with him. I asked him about Lincoln Kienholz coming in, a different style of player, more dual threat, bigger bodied. He kind of chuckled. He said, he's got some surprises up his sleeve scheme-wise. So I trust the guy. He's a quarterback guru. I think it's going to be a solid team. And then schedule. The last bit on this is schedule. They only draw one of the ACC's top six in the whole conference. And that only team, SMU, it's in Louisville. So I really like them to go over their total, be in the ACC title game against Miami.
Any sleepers to make the playoffs? I know you don't focus more on the group of five, but anyone, I've heard people like NC State. I've heard, Louisville's another one. Is there anyone? It's if you believe in the top eight, and everyone's going to look back at last year and say, well, Penn State was highly ranked, missed the playoffs. So is Clemson. So who are the Penn State and Clemson of this year? Doesn't mean it's going to happen every year. I think the top seven, eight teams are pretty, Notre Dame, Georgia, all these teams are pretty loaded. So I don't know that you're going to have that kind of team, but you tell me any team you could see like sneaking into the playoffs, that's kind of off the radar.
Yeah, I don't know if USC counts here. I think that's they're kind of on the radar. But I do like USC to make it. They're plus money. I think they're like plus 300 or plus 250 in that range. So a little bit of a dark horse. You know, I think the best dark horse way to make the bracket is some of the teams you mentioned where it would be a conference title upset win, where maybe BYU, maybe a Utah or a Louisville, maybe they're not the best team in the conference, but on December 2nd, if they win that conference title game, they get the auto bid. You're winning your playoff bet there. So it's almost like trying to look at who's going to play the Texas Tech or the Miami of the conference and maybe pull an upset there with better value now than you would get like in just a head-to-head. So, Louisville we talked about. I think BYU is really physical, but I watched that game twice. We watched Texas Tech BYU twice. I just don't see why that would change with virtually the same team for BYU. I was actually down in Lubbock to see it live, and Texas Tech was all over them. Going way down the list here, I'm looking at my top 40 board. A team like Auburn, this is, I don't even know how far down you got to go to get to them, but I like the coaching change. I like when a coach takes over, and if one side of the ball was playing well with the old regime, you keep it. And Auburn's defense was solid. That was not their problem. They kept Coach Durkin to coach the defense, kept a lot of their star players on that side of the ball because of that. And then he imported in his whole top five South Florida offense up there to Auburn. Quarterback, five receivers, five linemen. Like, you're taking a top five USF offense with a good Auburn defense, pairing it together. You know, I don't know about playoff, but I'd maybe make some noise here in a crowded conference. I think the SEC gets four bids in, so you're kind of playing on who can get that fourth SEC spot. I mean, A&M, Tennessee. Can I count Tennessee? I already talked about them earlier, but sure. That's kind of a dark horse to make it. I've got them seventh in the SEC, but you flip a game, you're in. So those are some teams to keep an eye on.
Anyone you like for Heisman?
Yeah, I've got a couple for you. Now, if you're a CJ Carr and Arch Manning better, it's bad news because the leader in the preseason odds has not won the award the last 12 years. So your preseason August chalk tends not to win the award. I'd like to go a little bit more down the list here, too. I got two guys, Darian Mensah, coming in around 12-1. We talked about him from Miami with the explosive passing attack. They're going to be a national title contender. Means primetime moments, big, you know, national spotlight, that kind of stuff that drives the award for better or for worse. And then Trinidad Chambliss from Ole Miss. This guy, he came up from Division II last year. He took over the job in September, really razzled and dazzled in the playoff against Georgia. He was scrambling like crazy. Had the stats, too. He had the Heisman caliber of stats, 4,000 yards, 30-something touchdowns, took care of the ball. Now think of a whole offseason as a starter in the SEC. Second-year bonus as a starter there. I think it's a playoff-caliber team around him. So those are two guys I would look at. I think around the 12-1, 15-1 range with Mensah and Chambliss. If you want to go a little bit further down, some value there. Like I call them roulette chips here. Look at Kevin Jennings from SMU coming in 80-1. This guy's electric to watch. It's kind of like a highlight reel type pick. Like, I don't think SMU is going to make the playoff, but he might have one of those, you know, RG3 type seasons where it's undeniable. And also Damon Williams at 60-1, Washington's dual threat guy. He put up a rare 400 passing, 100 rushing game last year. A lot of production from him. I want to see him play better against his best teams on the schedule. And you could probably say that about everybody, but there was a sharp divide between when he played a ranked team and an unranked. So if he plays well against the ranked teams too, that's a complete guy. So yeah, so different categories there. I'm talking all quarterbacks this time. I think it's the year of the quarterback. I'm a Heisman voter myself, and I keep an open mind to all positions. And I actually voted for Jacob Rodriguez last year, the Texas Tech linebacker. So, but with all that said, I think it's the year of the quarterback. You could argue 20 different guys here for this award.
All right, Brett, this was a pleasure. I guess we'll end on this. I don't expect you to have an answer. What the sport looks like 3 years from now, 5 years from now, are we going to be okay? Is this going to be a situation where are we looking at like super conferences? Where do you think this goes? Because certainly looks a lot different than it did, you know, even 3-5 years ago.
Yeah, it's changing so quick. I mean, I launched Pick Six Previews in 2012. Think back, that's 15 years ago. We had a BCS, we had the Big East, the Pac-10. There was no transfer portal. In fact, in my first edition, I had a little tiny blurb called The Transfers. It was like 20 names. I thought it was so cool. Now you got 2,000 every year moving around the country. So yeah, how's it going to look? Man, I don't know. I think these big two conferences might do another round of expansion, if I had a guess. Maybe get up to like a 20-team conference. I wouldn't be surprised to see that, where they poach off some of the best teams from the ACC and the Big 10 or Big 12. But yeah, I hope they don't expand the bracket. I know that that's kind of a hot topic, but I like to say that we already have the expanded bracket. It's called November. That's where you play the key games. You know, you pack your on-campus stadiums there. The games have real stake. and the winners go to the playoff there. That's already your play-in rounds. So I like keeping it how it is. In fact, I'd like a little smaller bracket, but we don't have to go there. I think it's just going to be, more TV dominance as we're seeing it. College football is really taking off as a sport. It always has been, but it's the clear number two in the country. If you look at viewership and fan passion, NFL is hard to beat. College football is definitely number two. They have now surpassed baseball, NBA, whatever you want to throw at it. It's college football right there in the top two. So it's a dominant sport. The money's going to keep flowing, and your guess is as good as mine on what that looks like in terms of conferences and playoff. But I did like that they limited the transfer portal second window, and now I might be biased here because I write a magazine trying to cover all these players. But taking out that post-April window was huge for me, because there were some years where I would write up a team, I'd have to just delete the whole copy. Like the Deion Sanders year, I wrote up Colorado, I had to throw it out in April because half the team left. So at least they calmed down the portal a little bit. I'd like to even see more stability there, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I thought going to 12, I wasn't sure how I like it. I like it, but anything more than that, you don't want it to become the NBA where you start the season and you know who's going to, I mean, these teams have basically already clinched the playoffs and there's no threat of missing. I think even with 12, anybody, as good as you are, you can have an injury, you can lose a few games and you can be out. I think 12 is the perfect mix, but nobody's going to ask me what I think, unfortunately. Brett, the magazine is great. Let everyone know how they can buy it, where they can find it. I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thanks so much, Will. Appreciate you having me, man. Good luck in 2026. I'm sure we'll catch up again. And you can find the book, picksixpreviews.com. That's the only place to get it. It's all spelled out, picksixpreviews.com. The 2026 Preview Magazine. We have the digital copy. We have the hard copy still rolling off the printing press, shipping across the country. If you buy the hard copy, you get the digital also right away. That way, for a couple of days where it's being shipped, you're all right away in there. If you like the magazine, you're going to love the in-season product too, called Pick 6 Plus. It's all my data, my picks, everything against the spread, updated every Tuesday, hits your email inbox automatically. So go check those out. I got samples, testimonials, and thanks so much, Will. It's going to be a fun time of year, man. The best time of year. I can't wait to kick it off.
All right. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Brett Ciancia. Rate, review, subscribe. Be back on Wednesday. See you then.